you know, go to your pantry if you're a baker and look in your pantry and see what ingredients that you're using on a daily basis, and then find those brands on social media and reach out to them via DM. And, you know, the first question is, hi, I would love to do some work for you. This is who I am. This is what I do. Can I please have the contact number or name rather for the person that does your social media collaborations or whatnot? And then next thing you know, you've got an email, and then you can email them and start that conversation.
This is your host, Dyutima, but you can call me DJ. And I love to inspire food photographers to dream. I spent 15 years as an architect studying buildings and constructing hospitals before taking the biggest leap of faith of my life, which was setting up a food styling and food photography business right from scratch. If you're a dreamer like me, wanting to start a new photography business or grow your existing food photography business, jump right into a world where I share practical, actionable strategies to improve your photography skills, to work with clients, make more money, or with a fearless mindset. This is the My Food Lens podcast, and we take you one step closer to your dreams. So let's go. Welcome to another episode of My Food Lens podcast. Are you ready for a fantastically drool-worthy, delicious conversation today? My guest today is Heather from Brown Butter Blondie, and she is a recipe developer, food blogger based in California. And you know what is her specialization? Well, she specializes in chocolate. Like, can you even imagine that? It's fantastic. Her photography is so beautiful. It's so mesmerizing that you almost want to just pick up that piece of cake and just, you know, either cook it or eat it. And also, she has a very strong sense of branding. She's been a food blogger for over 4 years now. And in this short amount of time, she has created a very strong sense of branding for her blog. She works with tremendously prestigious clients like Ghirardelli. And not only that, she is over 180,000 followers on social media. She's definitely made a name for herself in the baking world as a food blogger, as a recipe developer, and she's definitely doing something right. And I know that photography has a lot to do with it, including finding her niche as a baking expert and definitely like niching down to chocolate. So she's going to tell us all about photographing chocolate, the kind of light, the kind of gear, the kind of clients, the kind of mindset, the kind of process that you need, just everything about chocolate. There is only one rule that you need to follow in this episode. You cannot drool. And right after you listen to the episode, go get yourself some chocolate, because that's what I'm going to do right after recording. All right, with that, let's get into a delicious conversation with Heather. Hi, Heather, and welcome to My Food Lens podcast. I am absolutely delighted to have you on our show, because you don't know, but you are the queen of chocolate for me. Like, really, every time your photos pop up on my feed and I look at chocolate, I'm like, there's Heather. The other way I know is, you make us happy with your photos. I mean, every time I look at your photo, the other thing that pops up where I can say that that's Heather is you have such a consistent style of photography. You know, you master at baked food, and the way you photograph them, I see a very strong sense of Brown Butter Blondie coming out, you know, the Heather, you know, it's always you, such a signature style. So we'll get into all the delicious conversation very, very quickly. But before that, Heather, can you just say hi to our listeners and maybe start us off with something fun, something interesting that we might not know about you?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm absolutely delighted to be here. And I love nothing more than to talk about all things chocolate. It's like my favorite ingredient, favorite thing to shoot. So I'm super excited that we're going to talk about it today. Anyway, my name is Heather Mubarak. I am the recipe developer, food photographer, blogger behind Brown Butter Blondie. You can find me on Instagram there. I've been at this since 2019. I live in Rancho Santa Fe, California, which is sort of small town, 40 miles north of actual downtown San Diego. So Southern California, but not right in the city. And I live here with my three daughters and my husband, and we have a boy dog. so it all balances out. And something that you might not know about me, maybe my friends and family obviously know this about me. I actually don't like to cook. I absolutely love to bake, but cooking is not my forte. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I don't want to do it. I don't like dinner time. I like sitting at the table with my family and enjoying dinner together. But I mean, I'm takeout all the way, or, you know, the good news is my husband loves to cook. So we balance each other out really nicely. He does the cooking, I do the baking, and it's kind of a win-win for everybody. But I think that a lot of people assume that because you're a baker, you like to be in the kitchen and you like to do it all. And I literally really don't like to cook at all.
Yeah. I mean, the moment you say that you're a recipe developer, people will be like, oh, you must love to cook. But you know what? It's incredible you say that, because it totally comes out in the work that you do. I mean, baking is totally your niche, you know, and it's so natural. Yeah. It's so inherent to who you are. So this is interesting for sure. Yeah. Also, you're very lucky to have a husband who cooks.
Very. And I don't think I don't take it for granted. It's amazing.
But tell us, like, you know, one thing that I find, like, most food bloggers kind of, you know, recipe developers, they really struggle with niching down to who they are or what's their specialty, and, you know, what is there going to be like their laser focus as they create recipes? What do they want to be known for? And I feel like baking is obviously your thing. So tell us a little bit about how did you get into it? And then you further niche down into everything, mostly chocolate. So you know, walk us through a little bit into that.
Well, I've always been, I have a huge sweet tooth, number one. I mean, like above and beyond, ever since I was a little kid. I think I must have been growing up on chocolate chip cookies because, you know, I just have a major sweet tooth. And that's all throughout my life, you know. Uh-huh. So before I became a blogger, I actually owned a toffee business. It was an English almond toffee business. It was from a family secret recipe. And we sold it to all kinds of places, Williams-Sonoma, Nordstrom Online, Sur La Table. It was everywhere. Super fun. I ended up selling the business years ago. And then I kind of spent a year off thinking about what I wanted to do next. But I always sort of had this calling still to come back to the kitchen, because I just, it's the sweet tooth thing. I love to bake for other people. Like, baking for me sounds so cliche, but it's my love language, you know, like someone's having a bad day, or someone's grandmother died, or, you know, someone had a new baby. I like to bring cookies or a loaf cake or a batch of muffins. It's just kind of what
I wish you were my neighbor. I really wish you were my neighbor.
Yeah, we're a little far away.
Yeah.
So it took me a while and I didn't know anything about blogging, but I think I started I would go on like long walks in the neighborhood and that kind of thing, because I wasn't working for the first time in a long time after I sold the business. And I started listening to some podcasts and kind of just doing a little bit of research on the side. And I was like, okay, this blogging thing, like, I don't know a lot about it, but let's figure it out, you know? So, and I was really interested in the photography side at the same time. I'm kind of hearing from your question, but we'll get there. I had a camera for a long time, like a good camera, good quality camera. And we used to take it on family vacations. And I'd take pictures of my kids with it all the time and travel and whatnot. So I always been interested in photography. I just had never photographed food before. So I was looking for something that might combine the two. And then, you know, obviously realized that there could be something going on in this food blogging space. So that's kind of how I got my start with it. And I knew automatically going in, I was going to be a baker. There was no question I was going to try and make salad or pasta or or anything else. Again, not a cook.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an easy niche for me to decide to go into. As far as how I love that you know me for my chocolate, because it is my favorite thing to shoot. And I think a lot of people kind of do kind of look at me as like, oh, she's the one who does all that chocolate, which is great. That's like makes me so happy. I didn't necessarily plan for that to happen, I guess. So I think it's just something that over time you kind of develop this sort of love for certain ingredients or, you know, shooting certain things. And I think it's just something that sort of develops naturally, which I think is how it should, you know.
Yeah.
I know obviously plenty of people in the food space that are known for their pies because they make the most beautiful pies. If you saw my pies, you would be mortified. Like, I'm terrible with pie crust. Like, I am a baker, but like, I'll just throw like a couple pies in here and there. And it's better if there's not a crust on top, because I'm like, I need a streusel top on that so I can make it prettier, you know. So yeah, just something that kind of came across naturally and over time.
And when you say it came naturally to you, was it because you love chocolate or you love baking with chocolate? Like, what's the natural process here?
Yeah, both. And I had a lot of experience with chocolate when I had the toffee business. Toffee is like a brittle, almost like people compare it to like a peanut brittle, but all of our toffee was covered in chocolate. Chocolate covered toffee. So we were doing chocolate covered in dark chocolate, milk chocolate, white chocolate, you name it. We were doing tempered chocolate and chocolate bars and all of it. So I think I had so much experience with chocolate before that kind of just sort of led me down that path. And yes, if you offered me chocolate or vanilla, I'm always going to go chocolate. So
yeah,
it's my favorite flavor for sure.
You have made it our favorite as well. Like,
oh,
wow.
Thank you.
So you said that you were already interested in photography. I think that's very cool. Tell me a little bit, like, how do you, I don't want to say it for you. I want to hear it from you. Yeah. Like, what is the role of photography in food blogging? How important is it, you know, for you? Where did it fall in terms of priority when you were setting up your food blogging business and you were like, okay, I'm going to do this full time? Where did photography fit in?
So I actually started my Instagram page before I started my blog. Wow. I basically had to start taking photos of the food before I started the Instagram page. And so I kind of was testing the waters a little bit, you know, kind of seeing like, is this something I can do, you know, throwing pictures out there and seeing kind of response I was getting and kind of learning as I went. So I did that for a little while. And then I started the blog and actually putting recipes onto the blog. And then, you know, obviously adding more photos because, you know, Instagram's just sort of that one hero shot. And on the blog, you're posting so many and you're doing process shots and all of that. So obviously the photography is very important. We all know we eat with our eyes first. What is in front of you has got to look appealing and you want it to look as true to life as possible too. So the photography, I think, was sort of first and foremost.
It started with that. It sounds like that was step number one. Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. But how did you learn? Like, did you use a DSLR? What were you using? And how did you learn photography?
Yeah, I had a Canon DSLR, like I said, that it would take, you know, on family vacations and any trips I would take or just taking pictures of the kids around the house when they were little. It was just, I liked doing that. You know, I liked having good quality photos. But again, hadn't ever done food, which is totally taking pictures of people and taking pictures of food is obviously a completely different thing. So I just sort of, I think because I wasn't afraid of the camera, I guess you'd say, you know what I mean? I knew how to use my camera already, which was great. So I think that helped with some of the learning curve. I already knew like what aperture was and how to work the shutter and like, do you know what I mean? How to work the ISO and like which lenses would be best for this and that. So I already kind of had a step forward, I guess, in terms of knowing a little bit. I wasn't totally cold to the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
And you were using your camera for a long time. It just came, you learned little by little, and then you just applied it to food. Yeah.
Yes, basically. I did take some online classes. I did a lot of YouTube video watching, all the research that you can do for free online. There is really so much out there, you know? And then honestly, I have to say that you learn a lot and then you just have to practice. And you have to make mistakes and then you have to keep practicing. That's just really the only way to really learn.
And then you said that you didn't, like food was a whole different ballgame for you when you started. So what was different? And like, even today when you're shooting, what is the one thing that you're really trying to achieve? You know that food is different from children and you're shooting them differently, you know? So what is the one thing that you're trying your photos to do? And how was it in the beginning, especially when you started food photography?
Yeah, well, I just think that, I don't know, like when you're looking at like a cookbook or a food magazine or something where there's pictures of food, like you want it to look like so appealing and so inviting to people and you want it to look real. So I think there's a lot to learn to get to that point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just, again, going back to the whole we eat with our eyes first, you know, when you look at a picture of food, it brings out so many different senses. Like, you know what I mean? You might be looking at a picture of a piece of cake and it's like, for some people, like you'll think of like grandma's cake or well, that chocolate cake you had last week, or like it brings about memories and like you can almost like taste the cake in your memory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just think it's really important for people that are viewing your photo to be able to connect with some of those senses that they could be feeling. So with chocolate, you're kind of always going for, I actually have a list on my wall of like buzzwords. Cause like sometimes I'm going into shoot, I'm trying to like,
figure out
what's the wow factor I'm going to pull out for this particular baked good.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're always thinking about like, is it fudgy? Is it melty? Is it gooey? Is it messy? Is it moist or rich, decadent, luscious? You know, luscious is like one of my favorites.
Yes,
like, how do I make this look luscious? You know? So, I think this all goes back to like, what's that wow factor? How can I make this like really shine?
I love it. That's such a strong part of the process. And I think it's not just for chocolate. Honestly, it's valid for any kind of food. I like to do the same. I literally pick out the one thing that is the most striking part of my hero. And then I'd be like, I just need to bring that out. And I love it that just alone for chocolate, you have like about a dozen buzzwords and you're like, that one fits. Like, let's work on that. I love it. Yeah. It's such a strong part of storytelling. And, you know, when you start, you know exactly what you're going to communicate to your viewer. That's right. Why your photos are so strong. You know, it's amazing. Tell me one thing, Heather. One thing that I totally like, it just boggles my mind, is the amount of content that food bloggers create. Like, it's crazy.
Yes, I know.
It's like every time I'm on my feed, I'm like, first of all, who's baking this much? And second of all, who's eating all this food? You know?
Yes, that's like the number one question I get. Where does all that food go?
Exactly. But also, how are you doing this? How are you scheduling your photo shoots? How are you planning your content? When are you baking? When are you editing? When are you posting? Like, what's your process? Just tell us that.
Sure. I will say that when I first started out, I didn't have a process at all. There was no organization to it whatsoever. I was literally flying by the seat of my pants. I would wake up one morning and be like, I'm going to make double chocolate chip muffins. And so when I would go in my kitchen after I dropped the kids off at school and I make double chocolate chip muffins. And then I'd go in my studio during the good light hours of natural light, right? And shoot the muffins. And then maybe the next day I'd get on my computer and edit the photos and then put one on Instagram. And then a couple days later, I'd get it up on the blog. So I did that for a while in the beginning because I was still learning so much too behind the scenes. I was spending a lot of time still learning. Like I might've been doing that, but at the same time, I'd be spending 4 hours that night trying to figure out how to get some feature working on my blog, you know? So it was a lot of like balancing the behind the scenes with what people were seeing. But after a while, and when things started to really pick up, I realized that was not working for me at all. And I was getting really overwhelmed and feeling very unorganized, which is very against my type A personality. So I had to put some systems in place, which I think is important for everyone, really, no matter what career you're in, honestly.
True.
So now I use CoSchedule for content creation, like content calendar. And I just basically schedule out everything. I kind of do a big batch scheduling session before every season. So some people will do it like once a month. I kind of do it for a season. Then I'll kind of narrow it down and do like month at a time and then a week at a time. So I'm always touching base with my content calendar. I always know what's going on. I always know what's coming up. You can move things around, you know, because life gets in the way sometimes and you didn't get a chance to shoot those cookies or make that cake. So being flexible is important at the same time. But I think having that schedule in place and kind of knowing what you're doing when you wake up every day has been so helpful. And it's actually helped me be way more relaxed about social media posting. And because for a while, again, I was just like, I literally was waking up and I was like, okay, what am I going to post today? I need to post. I got to post today. What am I posting today? You know, and it was getting like, I would start to panic because I didn't know. And my posting hour was from 8 to 9 and it's now 8:30. And oh my gosh, what am I going to post? What am I going to post? Yeah. Now I know like 2 weeks before what I'm going to post 2 weeks later. So
fantastic. See your really posts coming out like every single day. It's amazing.
Well, it's been a little slower lately just because I've got some side projects going on, but and Instagram being the way Instagram is, as we all know, it's been
and
a
three
more
children.
Challenging.
And three children.
So things get a little busy, but yes, when I'm being consistent, it's great. And I use that content calendar kind of as a roadmap so that I know where I'm going.
So in your week, do you have days dedicated to, okay, this is my photo shoot day, this is my editing day, this is my baking day, or how's your week usually scheduled?
So I might be a little different than some people. I know I have a lot of friends in the blogging industry that are big about working in batches, and I kind of don't work that way. I'm kind of, I like to really, it sounds sort of crazy. I like to connect with the food that I'm focusing on. If I'm going to make a cake and shoot a cake, I'm probably just going to make that cake and shoot that cake that day. And then I'm probably going to edit the photos that day or later that evening. And then maybe when I get to, I will write blog posts sort of more in batches once I have all the photos ready and I've done all the SEO research and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of a slower creative. Like I like to like really connect with the photos that I'm making. I also think that with baking, I think it's really important that when you shoot that baked good, that it looks really fresh. So I get very paranoid about making a cake like 2 days before and then shooting it 2 days later. Cause I just worry that when you cut into it, it's going to look dry.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had that experience. I've had that experience even with just brands before where, you know, I'm trying to be on time with my delivery and I'm trying to stay ahead of schedule and I'll make this cake early and then go to shoot it a day or two later. And I'm just not happy with how it looks. It doesn't look luscious. It doesn't look moist. It doesn't look rich or decadent. It looks dry. It's crumbly. So I think for me, just baking a lot of times on the day of or the night before, depending on what it is that I'm baking, is kind of how I operate.
And do you do food videos as well? Is that something you do or?
I do some video work, and obviously we're getting more into reels now. So I'm actually sort of having fun with those, which I didn't expect. I'm enjoying that, but yeah. And then I do, you know, everything obviously goes on to the blog. I do most of my writing at night because I find that's when the house is the quietest. Three kids in the house, there's sort of always things going on. And I just feel like I've learned that my writing brain operates better at night. So
yeah,
I'll come up in my office and like write my blog post in the evening.
Oh, wow. Like
after dinner or something. Yeah. I can't write in the morning. I don't know what it is. It's almost
you need
like
chocolate to get your day started. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Maybe with a side of toffee. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
But I feel the same way about batching. I know that the world is all about batching. I feel like my brain gets tired. If I do the same task for a very long time, back to back to back to back, I find my brain getting so tired. I feel like I need a little spike of energy every time I switch between. Like you said, picking one topic, like for example, just picking one food and then cooking it, shooting it, editing it, you know, versus cooking, shooting, editing. So yeah, I feel the same way about batching. I'm so glad you brought it up. So tell me, you also mentioned that food becomes dry and food, like especially baking is so much more scientific, technical, and you really have to get textures right. I feel like baking is a lot about texture. It's a bit less forgiving compared to, you know, something like a casserole or a salad where you could toss oil or water over your lettuce and
bake it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I feel like cakes and frostings are a bit less forgiving. So tell me, how do you shoot something as tricky as chocolate? Because it has so many different textures. You know, sometimes it's crumbly, sometimes it's creamy, sometimes it's silky. So how do you really bring out the texture and how do you make sure that it remains fresh and it shows like that on camera? Do you have any tricks or do you keep things in mind for your photos?
Right. I think with chocolate, first of all, I think that you, again, it kind of goes back to what's the wow factor of this baked good? Like, you know, is it a batch of cookies and you want to bring out the pools of chocolate in the middle, you know, or is it a bundt cake that you're going to drizzle a chocolate glaze on top of and you want to watch it pour down the side? Or, you know what I mean? You have to kind of think about what is it that I'm going to try to connect the viewer with. So I tend to obviously avoid things that would give any connotation of dry or crumbly, or I want things to look rich and melty and gooey and, you know what I mean?
Freshly baked, like really freshly
baked. But so I think really, I mean, like you said, freshly baked, it kind of needs to be freshly baked. So I generally kind of bake it in the morning and I'll shoot it that same day if you really want to look super fresh, you know, but that requires cooling time.
Yep.
And sometimes you have to wait it out. And, you know, sometimes you might be in a hurry and then you pour the glaze on too soon and then it'll. So, I mean, I've had those experiences over and over and over again, but sometimes you just have to be patient and wait for the right time. But I think, again, just kind of goes back to trying to figure out, like, how can I make this just really light up on screen? Slicing into things, those pour shots. I mean, bite shots are the best with chocolate because if you've got something that's just really moist and the crumb on the cake, let's say, is just so perfect, like that bite shot is going to be your winner.
I feel like I have one struggle, you know. People underestimate how tough chocolate is to photograph. I've tried shooting chocolate, especially in the beginning when I was just starting out as a photographer. I tried shooting chocolate many times and it was just like a chocolate and cocoa shot and it was not easy. And then I tried shooting melted chocolate many times and it was not easy because it loses its shine. It becomes lumpy sometimes, you know. So tell me a little bit, like, how do you keep it looking glossy, especially if you're shooting something like chocolate ganache? How do you keep that shine on?
Well, that's just all about timing, really, because I don't really play with the food so much. So like, I don't make fake ice cream or, you know, add things to make it work for the photo.
Yeah.
So it really is about timing. And I think with chocolate, you know, you have to work quickly. You have to be completely set up when it's go time. You know, you got to have your lighting right. You have to have your setup, your scene already set. You want to make sure that just everything is in place so that when you go for that hero moment, everything is ready to go. Yeah. So like with drizzles and ganaches and pour over kinds of things, I think it's all obviously about texture. So you want to make sure that when you're making it, and so all this goes back to recipe testing. So when you're testing recipe, you're going to figure out pretty quick, like, is this going to get lumpy in 5 minutes or is it going to get lumpy in 5 hours? You know what I mean? Mm. So it kind of gives you a good idea of how long you have in terms of
yeah,
getting that shot when it comes time to take and, the, you know.
And if you have a cake that has like a nice glossy chocolate frosting, do you set up your cake first, you create your shot, and then in the end just come and put the frosting, like?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You're, like I said, everything's in place. Everything's
set.
Focus is set. I shoot tethered, so I can see everything happening in real time. And then I can take that shot and I can instantly edit it. Just give it like a quick edit and see what I've got. So yeah. But yeah, everything will be in its spot. And then.
Yeah. And what if you don't like it? What if you don't like what you see? The chocolate is like, it's just losing its shine. What do you do?
Well, sometimes you just kind of, it's funny. I always call food bloggers problem solvers because that's literally what we do all day. We solve problems because, you know, you'll go into a shoot thinking this is how the shoot's going to go. Right. And I mean, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't go exactly how you think it's going to go.
Yeah.
So you have to go into problem solving mode. So at that point, I think you have to figure out, okay, well, and it's something you learn over time too, because maybe sometimes you'll learn to, like, you know, do the pour shot at a certain part of the cake and get that really close in picture, or, you know, macro shot of it. And then if it doesn't work out for some reason, there's like the other half of the cake, you could almost spin it around and try it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
okay.
There
yeah.
are some tricks where you can fudge it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think you kind of have to, if that does happen, you don't like the photo, you have to either see if that's something you can fix through editing. And if it's not, you know, you can see, well, what else? Okay. What else can I do with this cake right now? Like, how can I salvage this situation? You know, maybe I didn't get that pour shot that I wanted with the chocolate drizzle, but maybe I just drizzle the rest of the cake and I'll get like a great slice shot. So you're just going to have to kind of move on and see what else you can get out of that shoot. And sometimes, honestly, I've shot cakes 5-6 times in a row, like, because it just couldn't get it right. And,
oh, wow.
You know, yeah. I mean, it happens, you know, and if you want it to be just right, if it's for a brand or, you know, you're just really set on it being like the perfect cake for the blog, you just do it again and again until it's right.
Oh, wow. So tell us something, like, what do you think is, you know, maybe your top three challenges when you're shooting dark food like chocolate, maybe your top three or your top challenges?
I think that people, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's just challenging all over because the texture and the color is so important. I think that it's kind of important to remember that some of it is expect to edit, I think is what I'm trying to explain. Get the shot and then get it into Lightroom or whatever program you're using to edit. Because a lot can be done with color and enhancing shine with exposure. And, you know, so I think that sometimes people will think like, oh, like, doesn't look good, you know, in camera. But I think sometimes you can get it into Lightroom and you can be like, oh, wow, like, I can really enhance this and make this look amazing through editing. So I think that's really important. And I think that just remembering that, like, you've got to work quickly.
Timing is everything.
In most cases, you really do have to work quickly. And be prepared and have tools on hand that can help you. Like, there's lots of times I will wear gloves so that I can touch the thing, you know, whatever I'm working with. Like, let's say I'm making a homemade candy bar and I know I'm going to have to keep picking them up and moving them around to, you know, make a stack or, you know, make a pile or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You need to be able to do that sort of quickly before they start to kind of fall apart on you. So I'll have like little tweezers and I've been known for using little paper clips to push things around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the more you do it, like anything else, the easier it gets. So I think if people are frustrated by shooting chocolate, they really should just stick with it because it really does get to be a super fun thing. And once you kind of get it down.
Yeah. I think you really start.
You
really need to practice. Like, chocolate is an ingredient you really need to understand. Your understanding of the product, of the textures is so important. Like you said, timing is everything. Timing is everything in shooting chocolate. And secondly is definitely leverage the power of editing to, you know,
absolutely.
To make your photos go to the next level. But tell me one thing, Heather, you know, when I see your photos, I feel like you do one thing very differently than what is kind of intuitive about chocolate. So chocolate is dark, it's mystical, it's seductive, you know, it's romantic. And the first thing, like, at least for me, is like, okay, it's that emotion that it brings. So I would maybe shoot it in a more moodier way, something with more dark tones. But you've done the exact opposite. You've gone in a very bright side. And and I feel like that is very challenging because when you have something very dark and then you're shooting in bright light, and especially with whites, there is very high contrast that you're working with. So, you know, to balance that off and to make sure that your whites are not too whites and your browns are still real, like you said, that is very difficult. So walk us through why you chose to go the bright way and why is dark and moody not your thing so much? So walk us through a little bit into that.
Yeah. So I just naturally sort of gravitated towards the lighter, brighter, airier aesthetic. It's just, it's more me. If you knew me personally, you know, that's my personality. So like my house is white. My house is very bright. There's lots of windows and the furniture is all neutral and white and what my closet looks like. That's just who I am. Yeah. So I think when I started doing photography, it just was the sort of natural path. There almost wasn't even really a consideration to go the darker, moodier route. It just didn't feel true to myself. So I started really shooting everything. I mean, in the beginning, so I wasn't just shooting chocolate. So I think I just sort of learned to shoot the light and bright way and then started shooting more chocolate and figured out how to make that work in the same light and bright aesthetic. So, but you're right. It can be, I have a lot of people actually tell me that they'll comment like, oh, I love your contrast in your photos. You were saying I'm kind of known for the chocolate but people also, I think you recognize my photos maybe because one of the things that you see is that it's more contrast than some other photographers, but it can come to the point where it's too much because like you said, you've got this sort of white airy background and then you have this really dark subject. Yeah. So you do have to be careful, obviously, when you're doing the photography that you know, if you're getting the lighting right and you know, you're using your bounce boards and all of that to make sure that you're not have so much contrast that it doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm. And tell us, how do you achieve that consistency of light? How do you, you know, especially, do you shoot a natural light?
I shoot both, actually.
Oh, okay.
And artificial.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. And majority is artificial.
Actually, the majority now is artificial.
Okay. That's a bit of a saving grace because I feel like, especially when you're shooting with bright whites, and you're shooting natural light, oh my God, your white balance can totally throw you off. So I always find the white balance and the light in your photos very consistent, which is why you have such a strong sense of branding every time you show up on my screen. You know, so tell us usually what your typical, you know, setup is. Is it by the window? Where do you shoot? And how do you achieve that consistency of light every single time?
Yeah. Well, first, thank you. That's such a compliment. I love to hear that people recognize my photos. I think that's great. That's just proof that all the work that you're doing to kind of create a signature look for yourself is working. You know what I mean? So thank you for saying that. But so when I'm shooting in natural light, I'm, 3 feet from a window in my studio upstairs, one window, one source of direct light. And then if I'm doing artificial light, I basically just mimic the same thing. So I'll literally put the artificial light in front of the window and then I'll put my setup, my table in the same place that it would be if I was using natural light. And I learned to do artificial light because I found myself getting busier and busier and running out of time every day. So it was sort of just a needs-based thing. I was like, this is crazy. I'm trying to fit too much work into such a short amount of time. And it was getting to be impossible. So I was like, I need to learn how to master the artificial light. So I'm so glad I did because it really does give you so much more time in the day and it really opens you up to being able to take on more work and more projects and not be stressed about it. I can literally come up here at 9 o'clock at night if I wanted to and shoot something because I didn't have time to do it during the day, you know, rather than freaking out about the fact that I'm going to have to fit it in tomorrow, you know, and not know how.
Yeah.
So so it's been wonderful. But as far as the white balance goes, I you know, in both cases, I basically shoot slightly underexposed and then I adjust exposure when I'm in Lightroom. I use very soft gray backgrounds mostly. I actually rarely use a bright white background. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they're usually, if you were to come in my studio, you'd see they're all slightly off white, gray. Nothing is actually bright white because that would be too much contrast.
But I think it's such a great tip. You left us with such a great tip right now. And that is for anyone who's just beginning to work with artificial light. You know, the placement of light is very important. I think this is such a great and such a simple thing. Like just place the light exactly where your window is and mimic it. You know, that's such a great way to start. And when you get the hang of things, then you move your light around and then you get wild.
Yes. And it's so freeing once you understand it and you can move it around and then you're using backlight and backside light and it's like such a fun thing once you've you know, and you can do so much more than you could with your window. So it's really, it's a fun thing to learn for sure. And I feel like it's becoming a more necessary thing, I think, for a lot of photographers just in general to master. So I still have so much to learn, we're all always learning in this industry, which I think is a great thing. But I'm so glad that I have the option, you know, to use that artificial light when I need to. So it's great.
And do you have like a go-to direction for your light? Like, do you mostly use side light? Do you mostly use side back? Like, what is your go-to direction?
My favorite would be backside light. So not always, backlit, but just a little bit off to the side. You know, a lot of times with chocolate, especially, you're trying to pick up that shine off the puddle in the cookie or off the top of the bundt cake or what have you. And I feel like that direction of the light really sometimes is really just pretty and glowy and, you know.
Yeah. I love that direction. It gives so much movement and direction. It's so powerful when it hits at the diagonal. It's fantastic. So what artificial light are you using, Heather?
I use Profoto.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay. A huge fan right away. And I literally I was nervous about it. I think we all are when you first you spend all this time learning how to shoot in natural light and then you finally master it or, you know, get good enough at it and you're comfortable with it. And then you decide you're going to do artificial light and it can be the scariest thing. But once you get the equipment all set up, which takes a while because there's lots of parts and pieces, I think that it's just so freeing, you know, to again have that light. But I think that people get scared of it because they're like, well, it's going to take me forever to figure out how to make it look the same as I was shooting before. But really what you do is you just set it up and then you just grab a batch of cookies or some muffins or something, buy something at the store, I don't know, pop it down on the table and play with it for a day. And honestly, in a day, you can figure out how to make the light look the same. I mean, you honestly can. And then you just go into your Lightroom and you edit a little bit differently. You do. I think there's a little bit of a learning curve on the editing side as well. But I just sat there and I would play with a photo that I had taken in natural light. And then I would take it with the artificial light and I would try to make them look the same.
Wow.
And then once I kind of did that, I was like, okay, I have figured out.
Yeah.
So
that's such good practice. I mean, you're really working on your skills, like either way you're comfortable. I started with natural light, then I moved to artificial. And today, if I have to shoot for a client in natural light, I get very nervous because it's just so convenient and, you know, certain light types become your go-to. So tell me one thing, Heather, like, have you seen, because I'm sure that you've met tons of food bloggers on your journey so far, some of them starting out and a lot of them, especially putting out their work on social media. Do you really see photographers, bakers, you know, making some kind of mistakes that you see in their photos and you're like, I wish they'd done this differently, or I wish this was a bit like that. Like, what are some mistakes that you see photographers making, especially when they're shooting baked food?
No, I mean, honestly, there are so many people out there doing such amazing things. My Instagram feed is just full of inspiration every day. Like, people are just, there's so much talent out there. It's just amazing to me. I would just say the biggest thing is, I think maybe even just more so for beginners is, you know, most baked goods are orange. I could shoot a lot. And maybe that's why I got into chocolate, because it was more darker brown, almost black versus like literally orange, you know, like think about it, your muffins, your coffee cakes, your chocolate chip, like they're kind of orange. And orange is very hard to edit. I find it difficult to edit. And I've learned over time how to get it, you know, edited so that it looks more appealing, but also still true to life. So it's a delicate balance. So I would say that I think sometimes starting out in the beginning, things can reach way too orange on the screen. So I think maybe kind of learning how to edit the orange is kind of a number one, like figure that out.
yes.
And then I just kind of going back to making things fresh. I think that sometimes I do see things in my feed and I would have like really liked that photo if the cake slice didn't look so dry. You know what I mean? Like you can tell through the chat, you really can tell through the screen. They're like, oh, it just looks a little crumbly, you know? And then you kind of know that like, maybe that's how it would taste. So yeah. You want people when they see your photo to literally drop everything and run to the computer and print the recipe or save the recipe or bookmark that image that they go back to it to make your recipe. That's the end goal. You want them to go to your blog. You want them, everyone in the world to be trying that cake. So you've got to put your best photo forward.
Yeah. So basically get your colors right, get them real. Yeah. and make your food look as fresh and appetizing as possible. So yes. Love it. We've talked so much about photography. We've talked about chocolate. We've talked about mistakes. We've talked about chocolate. So, let's
never
talk about
chocolate.
Not enough. Oh gosh. But tell me, Heather, like, do you work a lot with clients? And mostly when you do work with clients, what is the kind of content that you're creating for them? Is it, again, just mostly baked sweet food, or is it mostly chocolate?
All kinds of baked sweet food. I do have obviously clients that I work with a lot for chocolate. Ghirardelli is one of my favorite clients. Mm. I do things for Rodel, and they often request that I do something chocolate because I think they like what I do with chocolate.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, all in any baked goods, anything sweet. I do get approached once in a while with some savory brand that would like me to do some work for them. I'll maybe throw out a few ideas that could sort of be a crossover, but sometimes it's just not a match. And I think that that's okay to say that this isn't my forte.
Yeah.
This is probably not what my followers are going to connect with anyways. So if these ideas that are sort of a crossover don't work for your brand, then I completely understand if you want to find another influencer, blogger, what have you, to take that job on. So sometimes it's just not the right fit, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because that just means that you're opening the door now for another job that you can say yes to.
True, true. And have there ever been clients, they're like, no, we just want to work with you, Heather. Has it ever happened?
Like, very flattering when people say that. But no, you know, I work with amazing brands, and it's such a compliment when you turn the work in and they send you email back like immediately that the brand is thrilled and they're so happy. And that's like the best feeling ever. And then, you know, you do the post or you do the campaign or what have you. And then, you know, they come knocking again, you know, a month later for more work. Like, that's just the ultimate compliment to have brands coming back. Repeat clients are, you know, obviously that's like a win-win, you know, that's where we all want to be. So,
What style of content are you creating? Like, what are the services that you as a food blogger are offering to clients?
So I do the gamut. I do everything from brand photography. So just pictures that they're going to use on their own site. I'm not even going to be showing it on my social media or on my blog. I do, you know, full blog posts and things from my newsletter, obviously social posts on Instagram and Facebook and whatnot. So really, I'm open to anything and everything that involves baking and food photography. And I do a lot of recipe creation too for brands where I'm, you know, just creating a recipe for them.
Mm.
So, and they're not necessarily needing photographer for it at the time. They just need a recipe. So,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So I feel like in general, there's the perception that as a food blogger, the primary service that you can offer to a client is recipe development. Like, you create recipes, you take some photos, and that's you know. But can you just give us like maybe your top three tips, you know, that bloggers who want to make money from blogging, what are the maybe top three or five services that they can really offer to clients so that they can start monetizing their blog?
Right. I mean, obviously, you know, doing social media posts for brands. So some brands will maybe want you to do a post on a campaign, you know, over several months, or maybe they just want you to do a one and done post for a single time. But I think always going to the brand and letting them know what you can offer and introducing the idea of maybe doing a longer term partnership, like throughout a year. So I'll get approached by brands all the time for like, hey, can you do this post for us in, you know, February for Valentine's Day? And I will always, you know, say, oh yeah, great. What are you looking for? We kind of do a little back and forth, and I'll say, just want to throw it out there. What if we did X, Y, Z? And then you kind of introduce this idea of, well, why don't we do a post on Mother's Day? And then we could do one in the summer and we could finish with one at the holidays. And then next thing you know, you now have four posts with that brand instead of just the one.
Wow.
So I think that's something to consider, you know, because then you've just basically quadrupled
your
earnings potentially with that one client.
Yeah.
So doing social media posts. I do have quite a handful of brands that I work with that just want me to do a post on my blog with their product and a recipe and take the photos for the blog. And then it goes out to my newsletter following. So they don't necessarily want me to post it on social. And I've, you know, my following is great. So, but for whatever reason, they don't necessarily want it to be on social media or don't need it to be there. I'm allowed to post it if I want to, so I can share it if I like.
Yeah.
But they're not looking for that to be part of the package. So just offering that service on your blog, again, recipe development, taking pictures for brands for their website that you don't share on your own.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great avenue. So you can, go to your pantry if you're a baker and look in your pantry and see what ingredients that you're using on a daily basis, and then find those brands on social media and reach out to them via DM. And, the first question is, hi, I would love to do some work for you. This is who I am. This is what I do. Can I please have the contact number or name rather for the person that does your social media collaborations or whatnot? And then next thing you know, you've got an email, and then you can email them and start that conversation.
And are they usually receptive? Like, they will be like, yeah, sure. Here's the number. Here's the email. are they usually?
I have never had a brand tell me or not respond to me. Honestly,
wow.
I have, if you reach out, and I think, it's a simple email. You don't want it to be too long. It's, hi, my name is, you explain who you are. They're obviously going to go to your profile when they get your message, kind of check out and see what you do. You kind of give them an idea of what it is that maybe you're interested in doing, or pitch them something, and then say, could you pass on the email contact or whatever for the person in charge of, blah, blah, blah. And I have always gotten a response, because I think they think at that point, I guess they could say no, but they're going to give you that email, and then probably that person's going to decide whether or not if they want to work with you. So,
wow. And do you always, like, you have a formal contract with your clients? And
always.
And like, when you're doing photography for your clients, you're also cooking the food, and sometimes it's not about the recipe, right? It's just about just using their product, creating food, and just your role is primarily as a food photographer. Is that right?
Yes. And then influencer, so obviously that comes around a lot, especially once you've gotten to kind of a certain number of followers, they want to leverage that. They want my followers to know that this is the chocolate brand I use, or this is the vanilla brand I use, or flour or whatnot, which I think is great, because those are things that I am genuinely using in my kitchen. And I always make sure that, like, whatever it is that I'm trying to share with my following is true to something that I actually would use. So that, I think that's really important, to be genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you ever had, like, a very challenging client and you're like, oh, that didn't work out? Was there any instance like that?
No, I don't think so. I am of the camp of go above and beyond for your clients. So if I ever did have any instance, I'm trying to think if there was one where the client was happy, I would immediately offer to either do a reshoot or somehow correct whatever, error they foresaw. But no, I kind of go above and beyond. I usually deliver two or three more photos than they ask for. I feel like more is better. I always try to be on time. I think that's really important. There have been a few instances, and I will say that this is generally with clients that I've been working with over time. And, especially fourth quarter, it can get very, very busy. And, like, you're literally doing shoot after shoot after shoot, because it's the holidays and baked goods are obviously very popular at that time of year. And it can get a little overwhelming, and you might get behind because maybe such and such cake from yesterday didn't turn out. And then your Yule log from the next day flopped. And, you're like, trying to play catch up. There have been times where I've had to go to a brand and say, like, hey, I did this shoot. These are the photos. And I'll maybe give them a sneak peek and be like, I'm not happy with it. It doesn't meet my standard. It's not the quality that I want to pass on to you. If you need it to be on time and you want to use these, I will let you. But, like, could I have another day or two? And every case, 10 out of 10 times, they've always said, absolutely, take the time. We know you want to have it right. And it's great, because they know I'm going to deliver something that's really great. And I think that's reassuring to me, that they trust me, that I'm always going to give them something that's going to be a great product in the end for them.
Yeah. And I think you're just delivering the whole spectrum of a good client experience, but you're also starting from a place of putting ideas on the table. You're telling them what you can do. You're showing them opportunities of, what it is to work with you. You're opening up conversations, and you're executing it, obviously, seamlessly, beautifully, and they're loving the experience. Everything's on time. But then in the end, you also have a little bit of surprise and delight for them with those extra photos. So I feel like you're just delivering the entire spectrum. And that's why you've been so successful in working with big brands and all sorts of brands, but also just consistently staying very true to who you are and what your niche is. I think that is very strong, because the moment you start doing everything, it could go either way, right? So
Yes, absolutely.
This has been such an incredible conversation, Heather. Like, we've talked through the entire process, and so much about chocolate. I have one last question for you before we wrap
sure.
up. You know, because we're talking about niche, I think that food bloggers really struggle, especially when they're beginning, is that, oh, mm-hmm. what should I cook? What should be this? You know, where should my focus be? And also, first of all, how important do you think finding your niche is? And if you can give a suggestion or an advice to bloggers out there, how to really nail down and, you know, get into the nichest of niche that they can find, you know, so they can really be different or stand out from their competition. If you can leave us with that one advice or suggestion that you might have.
Right. Well, I will say that that's a little tough. The baking world is, I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, it's so saturated. There's so many baking bloggers and, you know, it's all been done before. And in some ways that's kind of true. It's, you know, I hate to say it. Not that it's saturated and you can't get into it, but just that it's all kind of been done before, you know what I mean? So I think that at this point in time, what is important to do is to do maybe what's been done before, but put your own signature stamp on it. So there are a million of us out there making chocolate chip cookies, but how can you make your chocolate chip cookie a little different? You know what I mean? And I think we can all do that, even if it's in a small way. And then there are so many things that aren't tapped into nearly as much. You know, there's a lot of creative recipes, and sometimes it's just a matter of sitting down and like almost just going through Pinterest and like inventing your own recipe. You know, I'm having a really fun time right now with these donut bundt cakes, like, you know, and I didn't invent that idea necessarily, but there aren't a ton of them out there. So yeah. I'm kind of going down this roadmap now of like making all these different kinds of donut cakes that are made in a bun. It's like a giant donut, basically, you know what I mean? And now I can do like all these fun flavors and like, you know, experiment. So I think, the important thing when you're starting out is obviously if you know you're going to be a baker and you start baking and you know you kind of want to start your blog too with like everyone wants to have cookie on their blog and everyone wants to have chocolate cake on their blog. And I think that's kind of an important thing because people will kind of legitimize you like, oh, she can make a cookie, she can make a cake. And then you need to start from there kind of branching out. And I think a lot of it is a little bit of trial and error and also seeing what your followers are responding to. So, you know, I think that I probably got into chocolate the way that I did because my chocolate posts get the most engagement. So that was telling me that people like it when I show them chocolate. So that's kind of how I continued down that path. So if you're someone that bakes pies or maybe you're really good at making bakery style muffins, let's say, there's 100 different ways you can go with that, you know, and if your followers are eating it up and they're loving it, then absolutely like follow that path and see where it takes you. And then next thing you know, you're known as the bakery
queen of chocolate. You know? Yeah, fantastic. And it's a real plus that you love chocolate so much. So if your audience is loving it, so are you, right?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Love, right?
Exactly. Fantastic. This has been so incredible, Heather. Like, really, I know that you're ending your day, but I'm starting my day. And look at the conversation we have just had. Like, can you even imagine how much chocolate I'm going to have in my day now? But thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing. No, this is wonderful. Before you go, Heather, can you tell us about your amazing blog where we can see all your delicious photos and your social media handles, please?
Oh, sure. Okay. So my blog is brownedbutterblondie.com. You can find me there. I try to share new recipes at least twice a week. And I have a newsletter that you can sign up for so you make sure you get the recipes first. And then you can find me on Instagram at brownedbutterblondie. Yeah,
fantastic.
That's where I am.
Thank you for being here today. And thank you for making our day a lot more sweeter.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
So that was Heather. And wasn't it the most fun conversation? I mean, she makes it sound so easy, right? But boy, do we know how tough chocolate is to photograph. I mean, I've struggled with it. I don't know if you've tried and you've struggled with it. It is not easy, but she sure makes it sound simple. But also, I just absolutely loved her tips, you know, just right from how you position your light, how you can integrate artificial light, how you can time your photo shoot so that the chocolate doesn't lose its texture, how you can make food stay fresh, and how you can leverage the power of editing. I think all of those were such incredible pointers from her. And also in general about food blogging, right? How do you approach clients, that email that you need to send? What do you write? How do you make sure that one opportunity with them turns into multiple and repeated opportunities? You know, your opportunities as a food blogger in general, working with clients, I think there was so much good stuff that she left us with, and she definitely left us drooling because I'm going to be thinking of chocolate the whole day. All right. If you're going to be thinking of chocolate, if you're thinking of shooting chocolate, if you have any question about shooting chocolate or food blogging, finding your niche, please don't hesitate to send them to me or to Heather. I'll be happy to answer your questions. You know where to find me. If I'm not eating chocolate, you can find me on my email at hello@myfoodlens.com or on Instagram. Just send me a DM at @Dyutama_myfoodlens. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, can I please, please, please request you to leave a rating and review on the platform that you are listening. If you're on Spotify, just hit the stars that show the rating. And if you're on Apple, if you could take a few minutes to write a review of the podcast, if you've enjoyed the episode, that would truly, truly, truly mean so much to me. All right. Have a sweet day. Have a toffee day. Have a chocolatey day. Have a fun day. All right. I'll see you next time with another episode. Bye-bye.